Hello and welcome to Pursuing Justice, a new podcast from Juvenile Law Center. I'm Yoe Shaw, your host. Each episode, we spotlight pressing issues in the child welfare and juvenile justice systems and bring you true stories from the youth who deal with them. But first...
And that vision is really about providing a platform for both children to achieve success in life, to interact with the law in ways that minimize their penetration into public systems. And if we can provide an environment through the kind of advocacy that we do that makes it easier for that lawyer in that community to be more successful in advocating for that one single child, that is also a measure of success for us.
That was Juvenile Law Center's Deputy Director and Chief Counsel Marsha Levick, who co-founded the center in 1975. This year, Juvenile Law Center celebrates 35 years of using the law, education, and advocacy to promote juvenile justice and child welfare reform nationwide. Next Wednesday, on October 13th, the center invites you to join us for our 35th anniversary celebration at Philadelphia's Hyatt at the Bellevue. The event will feature NPR national political correspondent Mara Liasson and special guests, including families from Luzerne County, Pennsylvania, who will share their harrowing stories as victims in the Kids for Cash scandal. For more information or to register for the event, go to www.jlc.org. And in honor of Juvenile Law Center's 35th anniversary, for our very first podcast, we go back to the center's origin story. On today's show, we're joined by Marsha Levick and Executive Director Bob Schwartz for the backstory behind the founding of Juvenile Law Center. Today, both Bob and Marsha are recognized as national leaders in advocating for children's rights and have represented many dependent and delinquent children in Pennsylvania. Under their leadership, in 2008, Juvenile Law Center was one of eight organizations in six countries to receive the International John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation Award for Creative and Effective Institutions. Bob Schwartz and Marsha Levick, welcome to Pursuing Justice.
Well, thank you for having us, Yoe.
Thank you.
So let's start from the beginning. How did Juvenile Law Center come about?
Bob and I were both law students at Temple University Law School together, and with two other fellow law students at that time, Judy Chomsky and Phil Margolis, we had this idea and this interest in doing civil rights work and doing constitutional litigation and being advocates for those members of our society that really were without representation. And as we thought about these issues in really the conclusion, I guess, of our third year in law school, we realized that we were really interested in working on behalf of children.
Did you have personal experiences that made you interested in being advocates for children?
I think we all brought different experiences to the table. In my case, I had run a youth center after college and seen kids with lots of problems, many of which turned out to be legal, and I thought that the legal system should be able to address some of them. Then when we actually got into this work, I realized how limited the law was in that kind of problem solving for kids and how many other services they also needed.
What was the public interest law scene like in the mid-1970s?
1975 was really the beginning, I think, of the public interest movement in this country, although certainly the American Civil Liberties Union, the Legal Defense Fund had been around for a long time. We were creating Juvenile Law Center on the heels of the civil rights movement during the 1960s, the emergence of an aggressive and strong women's rights movement in the 1960s. And as we created Juvenile Law Center in 1975 here in Philadelphia, over time, we became part of a very vibrant community of nearly 30 public interest law firms here in Philadelphia today. And of course, we're part of a much larger community around the country. In 1975, however, in terms of children's rights work, there were probably only a handful of other organizations around the country that were focusing specifically on kids.
You know, interestingly enough, 3 days after we were incorporated, Legal Services for Children Incorporated in San Francisco, using the identical model that we established, that we both came to it at the same time, of lawyers with social workers doing direct representation of kids in almost any situation in which they needed somebody to help them be heard in front of people who were making decisions about their lives. And then there were a couple of other legal services backup organizations around the country that were also beginning to move into this area. But it was very thin. People doing child abuse and neglect work weren't around because Congress had just passed the Child Abuse Protection and Treatment Act. It hadn't gotten mobilized yet. 8 years before Marsha, Phil, Judy, and I started Juvenile Law Center, kids had their first right to counsel. So public defenders were beginning to come into play. It was a field that was just emerging, and we got in at the beginning of it.
When all of you were brainstorming about the center, can you give me the backstory of how that idea came into fruition? What was it like to build a public interest law firm right out of law school?
Well, I always felt that Marsha must have known a lot more about what was involved than I did, because I felt that I was sort of going along with the others, being fairly clueless about this. We had to incorporate, for one, and find a lawyer to volunteer to incorporate us. We had to get a tax-exempt status so we could actually receive contributions from foundations, government, or the public. We had to find clients. And one of the things that happened in our third year of law school is that the Juvenile Justice Center of Pennsylvania had been working with kids who were running away from home and were involved with the law and had clients to refer to us. And the National Juvenile Law Center, which existed for a relatively short period of time in St. Louis, took us under its wing and brought us into some litigation strategies as well. So while we knew the general area in which we wanted to work, it began to become clearer over time as we actually began doing the work.
I think it's also really important, Bob and I are well aware of this, that it was a very different time in 1975. And so our ability, even financially and practically, to create Juvenile Law Center with no really significant income the first year that we were in business didn't matter. We came out of law school at a time when we really had no debt. Temple University was extremely inexpensive in the 1970s. We had a very different financial situation than I think kids coming out of law school today do. So we had that going for us. We also had idealism going for us. And we had naivete going for us. I didn't really know any more than Bob did, but we were unfazed by what we didn't know. I think it would be very difficult today for young people coming out of law school, recent law graduates, to try to go down this road in 2010.
What were some of the early headaches that you all came across in the founding years for Juvenile Law Center?
Well, first, we needed an office, you know, and a telephone. So Judy Chomsky's husband, David, was a cardiologist with the Center City Philadelphia practice. He only used his office Tuesday and Thursday mornings, so we had the run of the office the rest of the time. That was a huge help. You know, an electric typewriter was quite useful with carbon paper and whiteout. Getting the little things in place that way meant an awful lot. But we went around door to door meeting with stakeholders around the city before we had our tax-exempt status and before we were admitted to the bar, because that didn't happen right away. We had to await bar results, building people's awareness that we were around and open for business, hoping that somebody would show up.
What were your earlier cases like in the founding years? What was the original mission and kind of work?
Well, the early mission has evolved, and Bob often refers to it as retail versus wholesale. And so in the early years of Juvenile Law Center, we were very focused on representing individual kids. And we drew clients from pretty much all of southeastern PA, the five counties, Philadelphia, Bucks, Montgomery, Chester, and Delaware. And that representation, even then, however, in some appropriate cases, did segue into some litigation, some in federal court, some appellate work. So while we had an interest early on and a willingness to take on individual cases, we also recognized very quickly that working in this area, it was an area that was ripe for reform and for development of the law because it was so nascent, and that we could use the law and fairly traditional legal strategies to try and be a part of developing that base of law for the system.
Yes, we had kids come in off the street. It was while we were on the ninth floor of a building, it was literally a storefront operation. And kids who wanted their names changed, kids who wanted school records to be dealt with if they were changing schools and had problems, kids who were victims of child abuse, neglect, or would run away from home, kids with school discipline problems, kids who had been arrested, transferred to the adult system in criminal court, as we still see today, kids who had problems where they were living, whether it was in foster care or with their birth parents. There was just a huge array of problems. And one of the things that we learned very quickly was that representing children 0 to 21 was an enormous enterprise that required us to have far more in the way of legal skills than we anticipated going in. And I think that we actually mastered pretty quickly, all things considered.
And so how is the work that Juvenile Law Center does today, how is that different from then?
I think that the most significant difference is that we don't try to fix problems one child at a time anymore. We have tried to maximize our impact by really doing work at the appellate level, doing civil rights litigation, class action litigation. We are much more present at policy discussions. We have made, I think, great use of our ability to write publications and to provide training and other kinds of educational materials for both our colleagues as well as the community at large and for other stakeholders, so that we have really taken what we've learned over the course of the last 35 years, and I think we have found a way to disseminate that information and to use what we've learned in a way that is much more strategic and that is much more likely to have a more profound impact for greater numbers of children as they work their way through the public systems in this country.
And the other sort of two things that are really different in addition to what Marcia just pointed out is that we ended up pruning to get down to the areas that were really our distinctive competence at Juvenile Law Center, dealing with the justice system and the foster care system. And recently, for older kids, teenagers and kids into their early adulthood, when we started out, we represented infants. There was a time we had a huge adoption project. You know, we began to get out of the business that other people could do as well or better. We stopped taking education cases because Education Law Center, our colleagues there, do it quite well. We stopped doing day-to-day delinquency cases because the Defender Association did. So pruning helped so we could focus and be really good at what we do. The other thing is geographic. So when we started in southeastern Pennsylvania, as Marcia mentioned, our practice is now national. So we have fewer areas that we work in, but across the country as well.
It's pretty unique that an organization like this is still being led by the original founders. Is that something that you both envisioned for yourselves?
The interesting thing about that question is that we actually have many peers across the country, as well as here in Philadelphia, who have also been at this work for 25, 30, 35 years. We are among the older ones, but we're not the only ones. And I think that says probably something about the generation within which we came of age, because I think that, by and large, lots of the lawyers who came out of the law schools across the country in the late 60s and early 70s were highly dedicated to doing public interest work and doing civil rights work. And the fact that they have had this incredible staying power is remarkable, I think, for all of us to observe. I think in terms of my own dream, I don't know that we had any notion at all in 1975 what we'd be doing in 1980, 90, or 2010. But I think that we've really been privileged, frankly, to be in a position that we have been able to remain associated and connected in such a significant way to the Law Center.
Well, thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Yoe.
Executive Director Bob Schwartz and Chief Counsel Marcia Levick, two of the original co-founders of Juvenile Law Center in Philadelphia. Pursuing Justice is produced by Juvenile Law Center, a public interest law firm dedicated to advancing the rights and well-being of children in jeopardy. Consider supporting our work and giving to Juvenile Law Center by going to www.jlc.org/donate. Stay tuned for next month's podcast on youth aging out of care. Thanks for listening.